This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, the business station. It's Caroline and Ezra with you. It's Universal Children's Day today, and across the world, the one common problem is the issue of education. Not every child is lucky to have access to it, and as a result, governments have been heavily questioned for their lack of solutions. Now, in Malaysia, the ones hit the most are those below the poverty line and the indigenous community. The recent sad events of the missing Orang Asli children in Kelantan is testament to the underlying issues that deny these children the basic right to education. So, discussing this issue with us are guests Puan Hasmah Mana from the Education and Training Department in Suhakam, as well as Shak Koyo, contemporary indigenous artists. So here's what we know about the state of education for Orang Asli children, just to lend some context to our discussion. In 2012, Suhakam found that some 7,000 Orang Asli children between the ages of 6 and 12 did not attend school. Reasons for this include logistics and location of schools, the availability of qualified teachers, discrimination, and insufficient curriculum to cater to their cultures and beliefs. Orang Asli children attend Kebangsaan schools and Chinese schools as well, due to the proximity of these schools being near where they live. They also go to Orang Asli specific schools, of which 94 exist throughout Peninsula Malaysia. Puan Hasmah explains.
There's a difference. Primary school, the main theme primary school that you and I go, that one even Orang Asli also go. And Orang, 100% Orang Asli school. Some they go to Sekolah Cina also now, because that is nearer to their home. Not by virtue their trust in the system. It's nearer to their house. For that 100% Orang Asli, we have 94 in Semenanjung. Enrollment 16,905. And out of that 16,000, 3,780 stays in the asrama. And interestingly, there is no special school for Orang Asli in the secondary. We only have it in the primary schools. And that is only in the interior. Mostly interior. There are some by the roadside. I think in 2014, the dropout is about 19.8%. That accounts for 851 children.
So what we have here is an alarming rate of children who don't attend school and a worrying secondary school dropout rate among Orang Asli kids. Now, to give us an insight into how schooling was for him, we asked Shak whether the discrimination was apparent from the beginning.
You can say like a typical stereotype Malaysian, oh, Indian Chinese Malay, you know?
Yeah.
Where's the other one?
Where's everybody else?
Oh, for example, you know, in the form of everything you write, oh, done line, you know? I feel like I really want to say something about it.
Is that the general feeling, would you say, for most of the folk in the Orang Asli community? I mean, is that the general feeling? Does everybody sort of feel left out, feel as though they need that place in history?
Yeah, I do hear that a lot from my friends. Why should I go to the school? Because they not acknowledge us. You know, it's a basic thing. I mean, they're like a basic human thing. If you don't acknowledge, why you bother, you know? It's like that. And another thing, the segregation itself. Primary school, actually, if you just four Orang Asli or four Chinese, four Indian, there's already segregation happened there. And you don't know you're dealing with under races in different level. If you start integration racial in early age, I think we won't have any problem.
They won't see each other as different people. They just
exactly.
See each other as their friends.
Exactly. Yeah. Kids, if you see in the kindergarten itself, you can see there's no barrier. There's no, there's no differences from each other. They just connect each other.
Well, Jacques, tell me a little bit more about, how kids are integrating, but more specifically the experience of the Orang Asli kids who go to, let's say, secondary school. Mm-hmm. What happens, do you think? Because it kind of applies to Malaysians in general. You know, in primary school, everything's a little bit, you know, all fun and everybody's having
exactly,
lunch with each other.
Exactly.
But somewhere around, be it in Bukit Damansara, once you go to secondary school, everybody sits on their own.
They have their own clique and
but
stuff.
Why do you think that happens? And what is being done in secondary school or in these schools to address
the lack of integration?
Yeah.
I think, like I said in the first point, it's always start from the beginning. You educate your kids from the beginning. If you educate them, you you live in Malaysia with different race, you go to the secondary school and then, oh, you know, there's a problem. They say you have to deal with other races. Oh, I don't want to offend them and or something like that. Oh, do you feel that's or why they feel so comfortable to be their own safe zone. The safe zone. They have their own kind of safe zone already. You cannot say a certain word or you cannot be. You can't be
politically correct.
Yeah. Exactly. And it's another thing. You feel intimidated because you are really minority in that school. There's like only 10 of us in a particular time, and we often every like a break, like recess time, we get it together and then we discuss what's going
what's
on
your
in the school
like?
Exactly.
But does that mean Orang Asli children need to change their mindsets and adapt accordingly to mainstream schools? Puan Hasma thinks it's all a matter of balance.
I rather go to strike a balance to preserve their culture and way of life so that they do not lose their identity. But at the same time, they can blend well with the mainstream. How? Give them the right to quality education. Quality education is the A to Z of education. The syllabus, the teachers, the policies, the implementation, the monitoring, it has to be there. And also give them the right to make decision for themselves. Like I said earlier, include the Orang Asli, whether they're educated or the Kampung Orang Asli, include them in decision making.
So how exactly do we preserve their culture in school? With cultural differences being the dividing factor, it needs to be asked whether a different type of syllabus specifically for Orang Asli children needs to be introduced.
I personally think there should be a different curriculum, especially for those that have issues with people with low attendance, the school with low attendance and school with low mastering of 3R, the reading, writing and arithmetic skills. They should have a different curriculum for these people. It cannot be one size fits all. And also the teaching of their own language and culture should be part of the curriculum. Yeah. And most importantly, I feel that the approach to teaching must be different. As I said earlier on, that it should be more learning with fun, learning through play, learning hands-on. This one had been mentioned over the years, but we don't see it happening in class. And MOE in 2007 embarked on a new curriculum called the Curriculum Bersepadu untuk Murid Orang Asli and Penan. In short, it's called CUP. This curriculum was catered for schools that have problem with attendance and mastering the three skills. The curriculum CUP, it was modular-based. If you are good, you carry on to the next module. You know, and this curriculum uses their own environment and their culture. It's part of the methodology of teaching that curriculum. And as I said, the concept of that curriculum is learning is fun and learning through play. And I was told that this thing has stopped for the past 3 or 4 years. Even though some of the teachers that I met, some of the schools that was using this curriculum said, it does make a difference to the children. It is effective. They like to come to school. Their attendance has improved. And so also their achievement. I don't know about their public examination. But in total, the children love to come to school. The issue is some of the children, they don't want to come to school because school is so alien to them. Yeah, talking Malay, strict discipline, very new vocabulary, new ideas, and it's so conceptual, they can't even see what the teacher is talking about. Yeah, so I think for one, the language should be taught in school. Without the language, who are they? That is their culture. That is their beliefs. That is their way of life. Their arts. Their music. Their hunting. Their knowledge on herbals. Their knowledge on shamans. It needs to be translated in their curriculum. And at the same time, we also introduce our current syllabus, because otherwise we'll be over-discriminating these children. They need to be in the mainstream. We don't expect them to stay in the jungle, but at least stay in the jungle as an educated orang asli with dignity, with self-respect, and with the knowledge of their own language and culture.
We asked Shak what he thought, and he agreed.
There should be like a textbook about indigenous people, because we are the first people in this country. And I happened to visit Australia last year. I met my friends, my indigenous people, Aboriginal people who happen to be activists, and I asked them so many things. What they do in this school? And then say, it's not only an Aboriginal school there. Even every primary school, they have to learn about Aboriginal people,
yep,
history, and they even have a textbook. I forgot to bring it. I have the textbook itself with me, and I said, can I have it? They said, yeah, yeah. And I use everywhere I go. Here, there you go. Every school I go, I bring that as well. I try to convince that, you know, maybe that's the way to approach it. And to me, it's another layer of the segregation. This is a part of segregation, what I think. Because it's like we're not there. It's just like a myth, you know?
By, I guess, having a textbook that has all the information and knowledge, it also acknowledges the history and the heritage of the Orang Asli community.
Yeah, the kids will feel so proud. They are part of the society. They're part of the Malaysian, you know?
So how, right now, I imagine it's from, you know, father to son or mother to daughter. It's a word of mouth. How do the kids understand their own history of their community for the Orang Asli?
We came from the very oral traditional
tradition.
So the oral always came from the fathers and mothers. And we tell about our forefathers, and the story start from there, and then come back, and then the kids get to grow up and go back, and they will pass the story around. But you know, in education, you're dealing with papers and books. So I think we should, you know,
should be in there, because at this point you don't exist.
Exactly.
When we come back, we'll be speaking about the other notable problem areas in this mess, and that is the lack of experienced teachers capable of teaching Orang Asli children. You're listening to The Evening Edition. This is BFM 89.9. This is The Evening Edition, Caroline and Ezra with you. Now, in conjunction with Universal Children's Day, we're talking about the plight of the Orang Asli children and the difficulties they face when it comes to education. Now, Shak Koyok, a contemporary Indigenous artist, and Puan Hasma from the Education and Training Department in Suhakam, have been speaking to us earlier about the cultural differences that make schooling a problem for these children. But this issue of cultural differences extends beyond the children to the teachers as well. Now, first off, teachers are clueless about the history and cultural background of Orang Asli children, clearly affecting the teacher-student relationship, causing a major disconnect.
Shak, tell me if, from what you observed growing up, or even in engaging a lot of these kids who are going to school, do the teachers make an extra effort to engage with the Orang Asli kids, or to help reconfigure how they assimilate into the overall system, so to speak?
The primary, a lot of teachers, most of them, they've been thrown to that places. Like, they don't even choose where they want to go. And that's another level. And second level is most of the teacher. Well, maybe, okay.
Best for you to say it so that we have a clear picture.
Yeah, the teacher itself, they choose not to be teacher. They just like the last thing they can get a job, you know. As a teacher, okay.
So they teach
2,000, 2,000, yeah.
They teach math class, and that's all they want to do. They don't want to go beyond
that. No, that's even worse. They actually like teaching math, but they're forced to teach Malay, something like that. That's another problem. And it's happened like that. I heard a friend of mine who become teacher. She want to be teaching art. And suddenly, in a after years teaching the school, she said, they forced me to teach in English. I cannot teach in art anymore. So, like that. If you go to the another different school, like indigenous school, I think the teacher will feel so pressure dealing with different kind, you know, mentality of with traditional.
They're not equipped. They're not prepared to.
They're actually not.
In all your years in school, did you come across any teachers that you felt was inspiring that tried to make that difference?
Yeah, I do. I still have contact with this teacher. He's always, he even collect us from every home, make sure they going to the school. All the children go to school, and he always, I do. Yeah, there is certain teacher like that, and I'll always counter with teacher who not really interested. Someone is just smoking in a class or doing nothing, you know, or
smoking
sleeping
in the class.
Yeah, and then many things.
Well, it seems to be similar in schools everywhere then, where, you know, we have dedicated teachers and those who don't care. So Puan Hasma, in her capacity as an NGO rep and working directly with Orang Asli communities, has seen both sides of the spectrum as well.
I've seen good teachers where they go outside of their job to be with the children, to care for the children. Some even bathe the children, comb their hair, you know, to make them look presentable. But you know, most of the children, sadly, they have lies. And some of these teachers took time to eradicate lies from the children, say, even to the point of picking up lies from their hair, which I feel, even I don't think I can do that. And they really sit down with the children, and their approach is very different. They are very they use different method, not just the talk and board method. They tell stories, they sing, their hand-on method. They love it. But we also have teachers who are very regimented, just like they didn't realize that these children need a special approach, like I said earlier. You cannot just discipline them like you sit down, don't move. These children are free-spirited children. They can run wild in the kampong. They can simply climb trees, jump into the river, come back home, look for birds and that kind of thing. And suddenly when they are in school, you want to regiment them. This is a no-go. It has to be like playing with kites, you know. You let them go, you pull them back, you let them go, you pull them back. They shouldn't be in a hurry to finish the syllabus. Once you have the syllabus in your mind, then there goes these other values that you should be inculcating and using in your teaching.
While it's the approach and teaching that must be fixed, it's also the educating of teachers about the sensitivities that come with the historical and cultural differences of Orang Asli children. Is the Ministry of Education providing these teachers with adequate training?
Interestingly, MOE do have special training for these teachers that they plan to send to the Orang Asli school. I think it had been on for about 4 years, I think. But most probably, the numbers is not enough for the 94 schools in Malaysia and also Sabah, Sarawak. And yes, there are other teachers of different race sent to this school. They may not undergone that special training, as I said earlier. They are just the ordinary trained teachers, like any other teachers that we find in any other school. I feel MOE should best look into this to train more teachers in that special Orang Asli Pedagogy Training Center, I think. They have one in Kuala Lipis. But the numbers is not enough to be spread around to the schools in Malaysia, the Orang Asli schools especially. They do send back orang asli teachers that they train to go back to these orang asli schools. I do see them. I do see them student. And definitely good of their training. They do a lot of good things in the school that the those few that I've met.
How about recruiting those from within the orang asli community as teachers then? Is it safe to assume that it would be far easier and far comfortable a process if orang asli teachers taught orang asli children?
Yes and no. Yes, for one, once we will be thinking orang asli, teaching orang asli. But we must remember there are 18 groups of them. They speak different languages, different cultures around. So there are some who told me they have their teething problem, you know, to acclimatize to the group of orang asli, the kaum orang asli that they were sent to. But as you said, definitely it is a better option to have an orang asli teaching an orang asli.
Now let's move on to the subject of abuse. I asked Puan Hasma what the statistics showed because we hear so little about it.
Statistically, in writing, Suhakam received not many. But what I get is report when I go to the kampung for our human rights awareness and also the rights of orang asli to education. When we have our question and answer session, this is where the parents will start telling the abuses and the intimidation used by the teachers on their children. So I did list them down, and in 2012, we did brought this to the attention of Ministry of Education when we have a meeting with them. We even spelled out what were the things that the teacher did in terms of abuse and intimidation of the children. What can be done to stop this abuse? Some of them is a personality. They are just abusive. Some of the environment not conducive for teaching and learning. The classroom is so barren, broken ceiling, broken windows, and it's hot. The electricity is not working. I think that can lead to abuse. One thing, these children, when you ask them, they are slow in answering you. If you don't have the patience, you lose your cool. The training is important. But the moment of truth is when you are alone with the child in the classroom or asrama.
It truly is a sad state when children are abused in schools, the very place where they go to seek knowledge. And what doesn't help in the poor classroom environment in which both teachers and children find themselves in. After the news, we explore what kind of help has been extended by relevant authorities to help the insurmountable issues that come with orang asli children and their education. This is the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to the Evening Edition. I'm Caroline Oh. Now, in conjunction with Universal Children's Day today, we're turning our focus to the sad state of education affairs for orang asli children. For the past half an hour, we've been speaking with Shak Koyo, a contemporary Indigenous artist, as well as Puan Hasma from the Education and Training Department in Suhakam, about the many issues plaguing the community when it comes to schooling. Now, this includes discrimination, cultural differences, the lack of teachers, and with all the mounting problems faced by the children, their parents and teachers in school, it seems as if little action has been taken by the relevant authorities. We asked Puan Hasma whether part of the problem was the lack of support, therefore resulting in very little funding for orang asli education.
To my knowledge, funding is never an issue. The issue is the implementation of the funding. They should have clean water, they should have electricity, they should have all the equipment in the classroom, in the school. But the issue is my observation. This thing is not there. We still have school with the water for the past 5 years. Yeah? And Suhakam had been writing to them, please look into the. We even named the schools to make it easy for them to know where the schools are. Yeah? And so also about computers, about equipments. I think there is enough fun. Only that when you go to school, either it's not there or what is being sent is spoiled. It's not being repaired. Because I notice allocation for maintenance is always the last taken into consideration. So if this thing are spoiled, they remain spoiled for years to come. That's the issue. Let's talk about transportation. There's a lot of fund allocated for transportation under JAKUA. But we still have complaints from children, parents, that the transportation is not frequent. Or the transport provided is not safe to be used. I've seen, even today, I've seen buses provided, van provided. They're easily like 25 years old. But I have also seen the Jakua district has improved on their transportation. They do buy new Hilux, new lorries. But again, it is always overpopulated with children. And about the MOE's allegation, the school had been writing, not that the school didn't make a report of whatever repair job, whatever refurbishment they have to do. But help comes very slow and very late. I've been writing to MOE of a school that have no water supply, very bad water supply for the past 2 years. And still nothing much changed. So I think, again, bureaucracy and attitude and priorities, what is important to these children. They forget that they have to protect the children, and safety and life of these children is paramount to them, the adult, as provision in the Convention on the Right of the Child.
Shark is just as critical. I asked him how much support he thinks the community gets from Jabatan Kemajuan Orang Asli, otherwise known as JAKUA. Shark?
I counter with so many issues with the Department of Orang Asli, because most of them, they are government appointed, and most of them are Malay. And I found that not many Orang Asli work in there who really do their job or even
understand
what the real problem inside the community, because most of the office place in the city. How do you know what the problem inside is? Also, they don't really passionate about helping others, helping the Orang Asli itself, and that's a real problem to me. And the budget itself, where they go, you know, to me, it should be go to the community, not to the giving the salary, sitting in the office for, you know, typing. I don't know what they're typing. And that's another thing. You know, I feel like if you want to be a department of Orang Asli, you should be Orang Asli itself who manage it or run it.
Well, there needs to be at least a representation of
exactly.
the experiences in the department, so
exactly.
that you can relate to what's
yeah.
happening on the ground.
Just pick the right person to run it, and not just a person who so-called qualify, like education, you know. But it doesn't mean he know what's happening in the community, in the rural community. That's a real thing, you know. And a quality person should be doing the job, not just sitting in the office
with a pretty paper certificate
exactly,
from XX
paper,
College.
Exactly, graduate overseas and stuff. So it doesn't mean he do the job.
So is it then fair to say that there have been zero improvements in helping the Orang Asli community where education is concerned?
Definitely, I've seen some improvements, especially on the physical aspects of the schools and the asrama. But it's very slow in coming. It takes a few years to see the one that I've reported to be repaired, to be sent, but they are trying. One good thing is they are trying very hard to ensure that there are enough teachers in school. That much they have done. Other things, I think the software do need a lot of thinking, do need a lot of changing of mindset, attitude, bureaucracy, and approach is a dire need of change. Otherwise, we are just reinventing the wheel. We're talking about the same thing over and over again. Unless they look at this change as something serious and it must be done, especially by MOE and JAQUA and with the help of other agencies.
More with Shak and Hasma after this. Stay tuned to the Evening Edition. This is BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, the business station. It's Caroline and Ezra with you. In this concluding part of our coverage on Orang Asli children and the problems they face in terms of education, we asked Puan Hasma what she believes should be solutions to helping the community so that they don't get left behind.
The Orang Asli, they have their own belief system, their own do and don'ts in the society, and they pay special attention to their land, their forests, their rivers, their culture, and their own way of resolving their disputes, their own history, and also their own languages. I think we agree. These are never in the education policies. And I doubt the Orang Asli, minus the educated Orang Asli, maybe they were involved in crafting the policies. What I would like to think and to suggest is that these people, the Orang Asli from all walks of life, the ordinary folks, should be given the chance to be heard, to be listened of the ideas of what their envisage education should be for them, for their children. You know, we tend to think just because they are not educated, but we are forgetting that Howard Gardner's mental intelligent. Yeah, they have their own intelligence in their own field. We may not have that intelligence. So why don't we tap this intelligence of theirs when we crafted our policies, our curriculum, our syllabus? That's how I look at it. And we, as usual, we decide and plan for them, thinking they are not educated. They didn't know. This is our world. It's not theirs. So this is part of a failure. I would like to suggest that we also have a special school for Orang Asli, but for the achievers, the high achievers, just like MRSM, fully boarding school, you know, so that we can really have a special curriculum where they can carry on with their cultural and history and language of their own. You know, I think that would be a good idea.
Shak, on the other hand, has been proactive in running programs and workshops in his village for Orang Asli children, encouraging them to pretty much be themselves as they seek out knowledge.
I will run many, what's it called?
Workshops.
Art workshops, yep, in the schools. So workshop, actually, this workshop together with kids and the teacher, because I want this, and also the parent. The parent also important for understand what their children face with in the school. Also understand.
How young are these kids? How young are we talking about?
Are you usually studying with workshop for the primary level, but when I'm doing workshop, I usually start with visiting the village, and I will do workshop in the village first. In the village, I will start from early 3 years old until 13, 14. Because 13, 14, they are already in secondary, so I want to see how they manage it.
You know, and this may sound like a little bit of a silly question, but you know, when it comes to kids, and whether or not they're from the Orang Asli community, you know, so from your community, for example, and the kids that you work with, what are their hopes and dreams? I mean, you know, sometimes we think, oh, because they're Orang Aslis, their hopes and dreams will be different from, say, a child in an urban area. I mean, do they want to grow up and be, you know, doctors and lawyers and journalists and writers and all of that?
Well, that's really interesting because in my workshop, I do that. I tackle that question, and they are, I call it this self-portrait activity.
How do you see yourself?
Yeah, how do you see yourself in the future and whatever you want to be? So I told them, example, me, when I was a kid, I would draw myself as a painter, you know, like Picasso or something, you know. You know. So, and that thing, I can see that they dream to be something big, like astronaut, you know.
And so when you're doing these, I guess, self-portrait exercises, you know, these kids get to imagine what they'd be in the future.
Yeah.
And you say that you try to get the teachers involved, get the parents involved. When the parents see that self-portrait of what the kid imagines to be, what is the parents' reaction?
I can see this. They're laughing about it. I do feel that when I was in primary school itself, me, when they're asking me the question, what do you like to be? I say, oh, I want to be an artist. I say, oh, can you be something else than artist?
Like what? What do the parents want them to be?
Oh, of course, get a money, you know, anything. Like, you know, working in a factory. Some parent who willing to get their kids out of school to get a job in a factory just to get the money because, you know, feeding their family stuff.
Because that is the most important thing at that time,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. And you can see that also in the teacher, most of the teacher, that they're not really encouraging the kids to be whatever they want, to be successful. It's like they're laughing at us because, oh, you honestly, you're not going to go anywhere. You just end up, you know, like that, you know. So I think that's really bad, negative thing to, you know. Of course, when the teachers say that, you got really, you know.
Yeah, because then, therefore, everyone around you tells you that you're just going to just be that way.
Yeah, that's another thing we encounter also from other peers in the secondary school. A lot of them look down on us because we are, what's it called? Jungle men, jungle people, jungle children.
So just when you think you had it hard in school, I guess, you know, it pays to think about how much harder it is for that Orang Asli child. He'll have to deal with constant discrimination, negativity, on top of trying to fit in an environment that's foreign for him in the first place. Puan Hasma succinctly concludes with this.
The inclusiveness is missing here. Stop looking at Orang Asli to become like us, but it should be one of us.
And with that, we're wrapping up our show on Orang Asli and education this evening in conjunction with Universal Children's Day. A special thanks to our guests, Puan Hasmah Mana from the Education and Training Department in Suhakam, as well as Shak Koyo, contemporary Indigenous artist. If you've missed any part of this program, head on over to www.bfm.my to download the podcast. Our current affairs team also recently spoke with Suhakam about the issue of education for Orang Asli children. Be sure to download that podcast as well. This is BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.